versus Supitsina et al. All right, as all counsel are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone, adjust the podium to your level, and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Aaron Welch. I'm an assistant county attorney in Candiota County, representing the appellant state of Minnesota in this case. Really, the two issues that I want to make sure that we address today are, and let me be clear that what the state is requesting here is that this be remanded back for further review by the court in compliance with whatever order this court may issue, is that first, at least some part of this course of conduct that was engaged in by these defendants occurred in a public place. They were observed specifically in a public place while these text messages were continuing to go back and forth. And second, that
Who observed them?
Police officers.
Ah. Oh, that's right. They were watching him. I forgot.
Correct. And second, that the specific finding of the district court essentially adds an element. It adds this element of persons who are observing or who are witnessing this happen in a public place, that they also have to know the details of the conversation that's occurring.
Well, that seems to be one of the main issues in the White decision.
I agree with that, Your Honor, that even applying White simply as it's written and discounting the dissent, which I would encourage the court to review.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent dissent and really lays out the issue very well.
Unfortunately, it was the dissent.
I understand, but the law develops, as we all know.
So I have the complaints in front of me.
Yes, ma'am.
Each of the four cases, and I reviewed them to see where it talked about the solicitation itself occurring in a public place.
Certainly, Your Honor.
And they seem to be silent about that.
I think that's probably fair, fair reading. You know, at the time when these were being filed, we tried to, at least it was our attempt to try to draft the complaint as broadly as possible, certainly within the notion of the statute, so that any evidence we could get to come in eventually, assuming we would be able to have a trial, would be admissible. When the complaints were drafted, it didn't say, you know, observed in the parking lot of the Quick Trip or whatever. It just said that the solicitation occurred.
Well, and other than one of the defendants saying that he made the texts from his home.
Right, most of them from his home, yep.
That's the only location we have.
Right. That's certainly true. And if this were to proceed to trial, the state would produce evidence in the form of testimony by the officers that these individuals were all observed in a public place while some of these text messages were going back and forth.
And then, of course, the district court judge said that the state was not without remedy because there was this other provision that could have been charged.
Sure. And I mean, that's true as far as it goes, I guess, but the state can often charge any number of different crimes in any number of circumstances. Just because we could charge another crime doesn't mean we don't have probable cause, doesn't mean this shouldn't be allowed to proceed as charged, so assuming we have probable cause to go forward.
So if the agreement, the solicitation occurred in the first text.
Okay.
And then things like, please stop at Quick Trip or whatever and bring me a candy bar or Mountain Dew, mm-hmm. is just, do you consider that part of the solicitation?
That the stop and get a bottle of pop or whatever, that may not be. But what happened in each of these cases is once the individual arrived at the Quick Trip station, that is when the undercover officer, the alias, provided them the room number where they were to go to, and which hotel and which room number. And so that's a pretty important step in this person, in each of these individuals, you know, in their intent to follow through with hiring a prostitute. And so without that, I think that's a pretty...
The record indicate, I mean, that's sort of the procedure. You get them to go to some parking lot because that's the public place and that's what you want them to do, and then firm up where he's going to meet the undercover officer?
The reason that we want to have, under the process we've been trying to follow when we were doing these kinds of operations, we wanted them to come to the public place so that we could identify them specifically. And then the thing about going in and getting a bottle of pop or getting a candy bar is to further help us with the identification later. When they eventually show up and they've got a bottle of Mountain Dew in the truck or they've got the Snickers bar, we can say, well, why did you show up at this place and this time with a bottle of Mountain Dew if... That's just sort of a random thing. I mean, it's in one more thing. So that's the idea. And also, we always want to take officer safety into account, and we want to make sure we have people being observed as soon as we can. And,
So really, the issue comes down to, is solicitation a kind of one and done, or is it on a continuum?
Right. And I think... You know, the whole issue of whether or not I don't think it's whether or not that solicitation is an inchoate crime. I think there's ample case law to support that concept. But I think the distinction here is this. In the case law, we're usually talking about that. One of them, for example, and I'm blanking on which one it was now, but it's essentially where Kelly, where... basically, a prostitute offers to provide sex for money, and then as soon as she sort of becomes aware that this might be a cop, she says, oh, wait, actually, how about we just do this for free, and I don't need any money. And so the case there is, well, was it completed when the offer was made? And they said, well, it's an inchoate crime. Once you've made the offer, it's complete. And that's fair, but that doesn't mean it can't keep going on. Just because once it's complete under the law, that doesn't mean there can't continue to be further action that, you know, keep furthering towards more completeness in an awkward way of phrasing it.
Well, could I, you know, because I'm looking at the statute now, 609.324, subdivision 2.2, I think, you know, it says that whoever, while acting as a patron, intentionally does any of the following while in a public place is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. And one is engaging in prostitution. And we're not concerned with one here. It's only two, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Which is hires, offers to hire, agrees to hire an individual 18 years or older to engage in sexual penetration.
Correct.
Or sexual contact. So really what we're... And you're not disputing that public place, that this solicitation or hires, offers to hires, or agrees to hire has to be in a public place, correct?
I think... I would say two things about that. First, and this isn't an argument, but I'm going to say it anyway, this is how these operations have been going on for a very long time. That doesn't make it okay, but that's what it is. Second, and don't tell the legislature, I think they have some work to do in making sure that says...
Maybe we should tell them to do that in this opinion.
perhaps you should. And perhaps we've already talked to some of our folks over there and encouraged them to do that. I think...
No, that we would not do.
Okay, fair enough. I think that as one of the things I just want to point out in the dissent in White that Judge Shoemaker said very well is the purpose of the statute is to curtail prostitution, not merely to make it unobtrusive to the public, not just to make sure that people walking by don't have to clutch their pearls and say, oh, what horrible things are going on in my town. It's because we don't want women being trafficked. That's the point. And anyone being trafficked.
No, I want to get back to your previous point.
Sure.
So if you were to rewrite this provision of the statute and make it clearer, how would you do that?
Now you're going to get me in trouble. I'm not sure how I would do that right now. I think probably what I would do is I would just get rid of the public place distinction at all. I would just have it solicitation in any way, shape, or form. And frankly, I'd probably make it all higher level crime. I think having this crime continue to be a misdemeanor is, but I think that's the way to solve the problem without pontificating further. Now I'm not sure where I was. I apologize.
Well, dissent in white.
Oh.
And women clutching their pearls.
Well, anyone who's wearing pearls can clutch them. But I think that that having that it's this notion of this reaction. We want to stop the actual crime. We don't just want to keep people from seeing crime. Doesn't make it okay just because no one sees it. Let's see here.
Well, but do you agree that the solicitation, the hires, offers to hire, or agrees to hire an individual, that it must be done in a while in a public place.
I think under the
reading, the way this statute's written.
I think that's probably a fair reading of the statute.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you never did answer my question.
I apologize for that.
I was inferring your answer, but I just wanted to make sure.
No, thank you.
But so then our issue for purposes of this case is whether the hires, offers to hires, or agrees to hire occurred in a public place.
Correct, or at least some part of it.
All right, and do you have any, I mean, what is your argument? Because I think you're saying we take a broad look at this, and the offer to hire includes not only the specific, will you do this language, but it includes sorting out the details
sort of
in a public place.
I guess what sort of the necessary follow-through.
Right.
Yeah.
So you'd take a broad definition of hires, offers to hire, or agrees to hire to include not only the request, but also anything regarding the specifics of the request or the, I guess it's a contract.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly what we're saying, that we believe that the statute should be interpreted as broadly as possible to give effect to what the legislature intends, which is to penalize prostitution.
In public places.
So what, in looking at the facts of this case, what specific facts do you believe are encompassed within the hires, office to hire, or agrees to hire language that occurred here in a public place?
Specifically that once, each one has a little bit different facts. With Mr. Suspitzen, he's coming from South Dakota. He was on the road for a sufficient long period of time, and within that period of time, he was on a road. He must have been texting while driving, essentially, while communicating, given the timeline of the events. And a public road is clearly a public place as contemplated by the statute. And he actually was the one who made it into the room itself. He not only arrived at the parking lot, but he went into the hotel, went to the room, was brought inside the room, and that's the point he was arrested. So he made it all the way into a definitionally public place before his course of conduct was terminated, essentially. With the other individuals, they all at least made it to this public parking lot of the gas station, and then they made it across. And then made it across the street to the public parking lot at the hotel before they were intercepted by law enforcement. And while in that public place, at nothing else at the parking lot of the Quick Trip, either exchanged or received these text messages, continuing and furthering their course of conduct.
So the judge found in each of the opinions or orders that there are no facts alleged in the record that would go to the element of proving defendant was in a public place when engaging in soliciting prostitution, or that these text exchanges were public solicitation.
That is what his order says, correct?
Right. And at the district court level, he said that much of the state's argument dedicated at the bartered for exchange sexual act was to take place in a motel, which under the statute is a public place. But that's not what you're arguing here. You're arguing here that the solicitation was ongoing.
Correct.
And that because officers saw the people who ended up being defendants at the gas station and then at the hotel, that by inference, the solicitation must have occurred during that time period, well, if it's ongoing.
Well, no, I would say that's correct. Except I wouldn't say just by inference. We know officers observed the individuals in the parking lot at the gas station at a certain time, and then we know that while that person was still in the parking lot, text messages were being exchanged. So it's not, I would say, not just by inference. But other than that, I think that's fair.
Okay. Yeah. So you've given up the argument that you had in district court that the sex was going to take place in a motel.
Yeah, I mean, we're making the case we can on all the points, but I think that the way that the court read that particular issue was probably a fair reading of the statute.
Okay. Well, can I ask you, if we accept the way you interpret this statute, which I agree with you, could have been written better, but if we interpret it the way you're talking about, if in fact there had been one text in the privacy of their bed, of each of these defendants' bedroom, and they said, and he goes, I need the hotel room now, and he got the hotel room in the privacy of his bedroom, and then he just showed up at the hotel, you wouldn't be able to satisfy two, correct?
I think that could very well be true. I absolutely think, and that's why I think, and I know my time's up, but just to finish my thought, that's why I think the court went too far in the ruling that it did, because we need to be able to present to a jury the facts that we have to show that some part of this occurred in a public place. And that's all we're asking this court to allow the state to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondents, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Drake Metzger, and I represent the respondents in this consolidated appeal. And we are asking this court, to affirm the district court order dismissing all of the gross misdemeanor prostitution counts against respondents, because 609.324 subdivision 2 is unambiguous, and the state presented no evidence as to the whereabouts of any of the respondents at the time they hired, offered to hire, or agreed to hire the alias in this case.
Well, can we get right to it? Because basically, I mean, I don't think there's any dispute that that's the language we're dealing with. But there, I think the argument is that this is kind of a contractual agreement, and the details of the contract were still being worked out when they were in this parking lot or at this gas station.
I think that argument is completely disingenuous.
Okay,
I think,
and why that, is that?
The statute is very clear. It has to be an offer to hire, offer to hire, or agreement to hire. The offer to hire and the agreement to hire all occurred over text message. What do you want, an hour and a half? I have $120, $140, whatever it was in each case. That all occurred over text message. That is the agreement to hire. That is when the offer to hire occurred. Simply saying, here's where I am. That's not part of the negotiation. That wasn't contingent on, okay, buy me a Dr. Pepper and then we can do this. That was, can you buy me a Dr. Pepper, as the state has indicated, so they can help identify who these individuals are. But the offer to hire or the agreement to hire all occurred hours before in each case the individuals were arrested in a parking lot of the hotel. So I believe that is a disingenuous argument. Because it ignores the plain wording of the statute. Black's Law Dictionary, as I quoted in my brief, defines hire as to engage the labor or services of another for wages or other payment. And that all occurred over the text messages hours, again, before each individual was arrested in the parking lot. Essentially what the state is hoping to do, and by referring to this statute as soliciting, it again ignores the plain wording of hire, offer to hire, or agree to hire. Calling it soliciting seems to expand it, and it sounds like the state would like to define that statute as essentially texting with a prostitute, because that's all that really occurred. The agreement was made. Hours later, the individual goes to the quick trip at near this hotel, and then they say, can you get me a Dr. Pepper? Okay, great. Here, I'm at this hotel. Here's my room number. There's no, okay, I'm not going to, there's no reaffirmation of an agreement. There's no renegotiating the terms. None of the terms have changed. Everything's the same. They just got where to find it, or where to find it.
Isn't it a reaffirmation, though, if in fact she says, I'm at this hotel. And sure enough, they're in that parking lot or right next door to that hotel. Isn't that a reaffirmation? Yes, I am intending to meet you and complete this deal.
Well, and I think on that point, and I would disagree, I think on that point the Kelly case is very instructive. And in that case, what I take from that case is that there was a negotiation, there was an offer to perform sexual services for money, and then that woman backed out. She kind of realized, okay, this might be a cop. All right, you know what, I take it all back. This court said that act is finalized upon that offer. And I would argue the same is true here. That act is finalized of hiring, offering to hire, agreeing to hire, when it's offered to hire, agreed to hire, or hired. And that all occurred hours before these individuals were arrested. So the state acknowledges they have no idea.
So just so that I'm clear, under this statute then, as long as I am in my house, in my room, either texting or responding by an email, I'll never be convicted of prostitution when I go to the prostitute and engage in prostitution. Would that be a fair statement?
No, not at all. There's a misdemeanor prostitution statute. I would say you wouldn't be convicted or charged
of
for in a public place. But there is a separate part of the statute for that. So again, it's not that the state is out of a remedy. They can certainly recharge it under a misdemeanor statute. However, the county will no longer have the case, and it will be a city case at that point. And I think that's where there's some struggle, or reading between the lines possibly. But in any event, the point is that everything occurred hours prior. The actual act that's prohibited occurred hours prior, and there's no evidence as to where any of the respondents were when that act occurred. I believe there is testimony on the Iman case that he indicated he was in his home, but that's undisputed testimony, and beyond that, there's nothing that the state presented that presents any evidence as to where these individuals were. And again, I think this case is similar to the White case. It is a poorly drafted statute, and if the state is hoping to pursue this type of case. But as this court said in the White case, we cannot supply that which the legislature overlooks or purposely omits. And this court should do in this case what it did in the White case, affirm the order and let the legislature change it. That's their job. But the job of this court is to follow the plain wording of the unambiguous statute. And I think the district court did that, and I do think that the order should be affirmed. Now, one thing I'd like to get into that the state raised in its argument is that this might be how Kandi-Ohi County has been performing this sting operation, but that is not how all counties do it. And I think this...
So we're a lot smarter in Ramsey County, are we?
Possibly.
But that's not part of the record, is it?
Well, that's not part of the record. But even if that's true, I think the State v. Trubtoski case, it's an unpublished case that the state cited, that is a perfect example of how a sting operation should go if they want to do a in-the-public-place sting operation. And in that case, essentially the sting operation was that, similarly to this, there'd be an ad in a classifieds advertising sexual services for money. An individual would show up to a hotel, actually interact with an undercover officer, negotiate in a public place the terms, exchange money in the public place, and then they're arrested. And so that is the definition of prostitution in a public place.
Why is there requirement that it be in a public place? I mean, if you're really concerned about human trafficking, why does it matter where this solicitation takes place? If it's in fact a solicitation to obtain sex for money.
And I guess my response to that would be looking at the legislative intent that was discussed in the White case. Human trafficking was not the issue. Keeping prostitution out of the public eye was the issue. And that was the legislative intent that was found to be why there's an enhancement to a gross misdemeanor, not human trafficking. That might be the case now, but again, that's the legislature's job to clarify. That is not the intent that was gleaned at, in the White case. And so if there is going to be a change in legislative intent, I think that needs to happen at the legislature. and be defined in the statute. But as it is now, as this court has previously found, the point of this statute is, again, to keep prostitution out of the public eye, or the negotiating of a prostitution out of the public eye. I just want to reiterate, there's absolutely no evidence of the location of any of the respondents in any of these cases other than the Iman case. All of the negotiating, all of the
So even if while he was at the gas station, the prostitute or the undercover officer had said, so we're still set, right? And then relisted just to confirm, you've got the $100, we're going to do whatever we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that wouldn't count.
That didn't occur in this case.
Oh, well, I know. I got that. But I mean, but that sort of, reconfirmation wouldn't count because, no, the deal was set, whatever, on the texts back and forth in the guy's house. And simply reaffirming that, it's a completed crime.
I would disagree with that. I think if there was further discussion, even just reaffirming all of the terms in public, that would be a gross misdemeanor. But that didn't occur in this case. Similarly,
except with regard to one of them, with regard to the condoms.
Well, again, I would akin that to the picking up a Dr. Pepper or Mountain Dew. It's just something that...
You've got to be kidding me.
Well, I think that's an indication that sex might occur, but I don't think that's part of the negotiation. That's not part of the offer. That was not part of the agreement. It was just, hey, pick up condoms, just like, hey, pick up a Mountain Dew for me. I would argue that those are exactly the same. Again, picking up condoms was not contingent on anything occurring. It didn't say if you don't pick up condoms, nothing's going to happen, or, the whole deal's off. But I would akin that to the Mountain Dew or the Dr. Pepper. I would agree that that is...
Feel free to quit while you're ahead.
unless the court has any other questions, I think I've stated my argument.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the appellant, please.
Thank you. Just a couple of brief points I'd like to make, and then I'm certainly happy to entertain any further questions. First, and just for what it's worth by way of backstory, on the issue of when the negotiations are complete, part of the, and this goes to actually, I think, a question you asked earlier, the officers, in this case, undercover officers, who's actually engaging in the text messaging, will not give the room number until they're in the public place. That doesn't happen. That would never occur, that at least under the way we've been doing it, that would happen until they arrive at that gas station. Even if we throw out everything about the gas station, the state can certainly still prosecute. If this all gets dismissed, we're going to go back, we're going to recharge all these folks with misdemeanors, and we're going to go forward. That's what we'll do. What we're trying to do is stop human trafficking in Kanawha County, and we're going to use whatever statutes we can to accomplish that goal. And if we can get someone on a gross misdemeanor rather than a misdemeanor, we're going to do that. And part of why, in every single one of these cases, the issue was brought up about jurisdiction and all that kind of thing. The Kanawha County Attorney's Office, our huge office of seven, we have an agreement with the city attorney, who's one person, that we will handle all prostitution cases. There's just an informal agreement there. There's no jurisdictional turf wars going on. In every single one of these cases, we could have pled this down to a misdemeanor, but we didn't give, that was asked for in every case, and we didn't give it because we want to prosecute these cases as fully as we possibly can. We didn't give any deals. That's why we're here. I could have not been here today very easily. We want to push this statute very candidly. We want to get as much into it as we can. If we have to try to change stuff through the legislature later, we'll do that. But these folks were coming to Kanawha County to buy our young women, and we want to stop that. And that's why we're trying to read this as broadly as we can. It's anything the court will give us, we want to take advantage
of. Well, do you agree that either way, if we affirm or reverse, we will have to do this in a published decision?
I think so. I do think so, because I think if you, even on the first part only, if you're going to say this is what this statute means, I think everyone's going to have to be put on notice of that.
Well, could I ask you this? I mean, because we're dealing with this language, hires, offers to hire, agrees to hire, and you want an expansive definition for that. And I'm sure you're not the first county, and are you probably be the last to try to enforce a statute like this. Were you able to find any case law anywhere where they've looked at a more expansive reading of what's included in hires, offers to hire, or agrees to hire in a public place?
I wish I had, and I really wasn't able to. And I mean, I'm sure counsel for respondent diligently worked on it as well. And I don't think we have a clear answer on this of how it's been interpreted. And I think, I think as more counties, I think it's fair to say that historically this has been a metropolitan issue, maybe Duluth, maybe Rochester, maybe Moorhead. But as more of our rural counties and offices like ours are going to trainings, are going to these things, are engaging the East Metro Task Force to come out and give our officers training on how to do this stuff, this is going to happen more and more and more. We have limited resources, and we're going to use what we can to do what we can. And that's where we find ourselves here. On the last point, I do want to point out that in each of these cases, I believe in each of them, maybe one of them didn't, but I think all of them had a negotiation about whether or not condoms would be a part of it, and that was linked to the price. The way that
in the parking lots?
No, it was linked to the price in the initial negotiations, but whether or not the person eventually obtained the condoms or had the condoms was a part of the contract, so to speak, because in each of the cases, if someone wants sex without a condom, our practice is to say, well, that's a $20 upcharge, or whatever the case might be. So that is part of the concept of the contract here. I think that the notion of a inchoate offense, yeah, there's enough. I wanted to parse out just really quickly the notion of finalized and completed. Because I think what counsel for respondent said is that these were finalized once that conversation happened, wherever the initial conversation happened. And I disagree with that. It may have been completed, or we can go forward and we can prosecute them for the misdemeanor on just that. But what we're saying is this isn't finalized until the person either gives it up or gets picked up. And as long as they continue to engage with this person, and as long as some part of that engagement takes place in a public place, we think that we can prosecute under the gross misdemeanor statute and ask the court to allow us to make that case to the district court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Welsh. Thank you, Mr. Metzger. The matter is submitted.